Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend Ron Brown. Hi, Ron. How are things going?
Just fine, Dr. Stan.
Well, we're certainly living in exciting financial times, aren't we?
We sure are.
Why don't you sort of give us your takedown of what's actually happening throughout the world today? Because certainly the world is changing financially. I don't think most people really understand what's going on. We live in a utopian society. I don't think there's ever been a society throughout all history that has had the high levels of standards of living that we have here. But I think it's beginning to change. I think we're seeing more and more people slipping into poverty. And the world we've known is certainly rapidly changing. Give us your overview of what's really going on.
Here's, I've shared this several times, but let's get what I call an overview of what I think is going on. I've been sharing this probably for 2 or maybe 3 years, so let me just repeat it, and then we'll kind of fill in the gaps and see if it makes sense. What I've been saying is that I believe there are two, I'll just call them concepts, that are ruling the world market today. The first is the scriptures and common sense simply tell us that the borrower becomes the slave to the lender. And, of course, we all know the revised golden rule, which says he who owns the gold makes the rule. So if you look at the world today, what we see is Western civilization, especially Europe and the U.S., so hopelessly in debt, there really isn't any answer to the problem. All our leaders have been doing for, 30 years since I've been in this business, 33 years, is kick the can down the road to put off the day of reckoning. And in order to do that, they have to do what? They have to run the printing press to bail out their buddies in Wall Street and the banking system. They're not too worried about Main Street, but they're bailing out their buddies. But as you run the printing press, you threaten the credibility of your currency. So to fight that battle, what the bankers have to do and have been doing for 30 years since I've been in the business is they have to manipulate and suppress the price of gold and silver. Because gold and silver act like the canary in the coal mine. It's the barometer of confidence in their Ponzi scheme. And in my mind, here's the key to understanding the whole thing, because it's coming to a head as we speak, and that is, as long as we get the price of gold and silver off these commodity exchanges in New York and London, where you have a bunch of people trading not gold and silver, but paper contracts on high 10-to-1 leverage. And so what you have in every contract of open interest on the futures market has to have a buyer, someone betting it's going to go higher, and someone betting it's going to go lower. So it's like a bookie operation, and that's... So what do we have? We have the hedge funds and speculators on the long side betting gold and silver can go higher. But on the short side, you have these international bankers like Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, Deutsche Bank. And see, they go into the battle with unlimited funds to play the game. So they can pick a time that they're choosing and just overwhelm the market with sales. For example, when they drove the market down $100 or so here in the last couple of weeks, they issued one order to sell 400 tons of gold. That was Goldman Sachs issued that. So you see this massive selling, it drives the price down, and since these speculators are trading on 10-to-1 leverage, they get wiped out and they get margin calls, and that's when the price just cascades down. But see, here is their Achilles heel. And that is every time Goldman Sachs, Deutsche Bank, and Morgan Chase drive the price down artificially, the kings of the East, who are our creditors, say, thanks for the discount, just ship us another 5-10 million ounces of real estate. So what we're witnessing is a gradual, methodical squeeze play where the kings of the East have got these Western bankers over a barrel.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in a moment. Ron, why don't you go right ahead? Because I agree with you. The kings of the East, China, and other Oriental countries over there, India, are buying up the gold at bargain prices. And basically, of course, initially, this was mostly paper gold. I mean, so the bankers didn't have the 400 or 500 tons of gold that they sold. It was all paper. But basically, where is this gold coming from that China and India are buying? They're not going to be stupid enough simply to take paper delivery, are they?
You read my book. You know, when you look at the amount of gold that's being imported to China and these Eastern Bloc nations, for example, Jim Willey says that last year China's imports of gold was somewhere between 5 and 7,000 tons. My goodness, that's 2 to 3 times total world production. So I think we can draw three conclusions from what's going on. And one is that can't go on forever. In fact, it can't go on for very long. One country or one group is not going to be able to continue to import 2 to 3 times the world production. The second thing you got to ask is, it seems like the Eastern Bloc nations are heading for the end game because it's no longer 2 steps forward, 1 step back, like it's been 10, 15, 20 years. And the big question that's now coming to the surface is, where in the heck is all that gold coming from? And the truth is, they're stealing the gold from every form and fashion. For example, Germany decided they want to get their 3,350 tons back, and the West said, well, we'll give you 20% of it, but we'll do that over a period of 7 years. So what did they really say? We don't have your gold. We think we can come up with a little bit to appease you, but we can't give it all back. So as more and more people wake up to the reality that any type of paper gold in storage, whether it's an exchange-traded fund or in a safety deposit box or in some big Swiss bank or whatever, in reality, it's going to turn out that it's really nothing but a silly piece of paper. And as more people realize that danger, you're starting to see a run on the gold, and that's when the fraud is going to be exposed.
And the question, I think, is not if, but a matter of when this is going to happen. And certainly, it's getting closer all the time. So basically, of course, so what do you foresee next? Certainly, China is accumulating gold. China certainly would like to have their yuan be the major reserve currency of the world. And certainly, increasingly, it looks like this is going to happen. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's been a methodical game that they've been playing for 15, 20 years. You know, it started out, 10, 20, 30 years ago, when China basically says, why don't you send your plants and technology overseas, take advantage of our cheap labor?
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Ron is simply saying that China has been working to become the major reserve currency of the world for 15 years or more. And basically, of course, they started out saying to the America, look, why don't you just let us do the producing over here? We can produce with a very cheap labor. And then Americans can buy a lot of products very, very cheaply from us. And they'll be happy with you because certainly there's no inflation. But people are going to be fantastically profitable and they're going to be certainly living at very, very high living standards. So you just take down your trade barriers and certainly you allow us to do the manufacturing. It'll raise our levels of living, our standard of living here. And that's exactly what's happened. The standard of living in China has gone up tremendously. In fact, it's gone up so much that the price of goods in China has actually risen so much that we've actually had to begin producing in other Malaysian countries because it was too expensive to produce it in China. But of course, then China hopes, because they have enough people in the middle class now, that they can begin to purchase their own products and that their economy will stabilize. And this is really this whole goal of the elitists who run the world. They want to raise living standards throughout the world. In fact, if you read David Rockefeller's memoirs, he will tell you how we and our policies here, this is page 405 and 406 of his book, Memoirs, how we here have actually raised the living standards in China and other countries throughout the world, and that's true. But in the process, we are going eventually to end up destroying the living standards here in America, because today, America is financially and morally and ethically bankrupt. But go right ahead, Ron.
You know, to document what you're saying, I remember back in the mid-80s, 60 Minutes did almost a whole hour and they were showing telephone calls that they had from government agents calling these corporations, encouraging them to ship their plants overseas. So it was not something that was just happening. It was methodically promoted by the government. So, you know, that created a ruse that we didn't see the inflation because we were buying these cheap products. But in the bigger picture, what we were doing is shipping all of our jobs overseas. So how do you have prosperity when people are going getting unemployed at record rates? And it just continued while they continue to say we have a recovery coming. The basic facts, you know, say just the opposite. We're still in a massive recession. We're really in closer to a depression than we are in a recession. But going back to China, you know, I think it really triggered, started to accelerate downward. Remember, Dr. Stan, about a year, year and a half ago when the U.S. came out and put draconian sanctions on Iran. And one of the sanctions they put on them was to exclude Iran from what's called the SWIFT system, which is the banking system where all international trade was funneled through, because remember, the dollar is the reserve currency, so everything had to be conducted in terms of dollars, so it went through the SWIFT system. So when we threatened to exclude them, and in fact when we did exclude them from it, it was going to, on the surface, make it very difficult for Iran to conduct business, but immediately India and China came to the rescue and they said, Iran, we will buy your oil and we will pay for it with gold. And when they did that, we had the gall to threaten those two countries, and that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. They immediately called a summit meeting of what's called the BRICS countries, which is Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, and they met for a week or two, and they came out with a game plan, and I think that's what they've been implementing ever since. The first thing they did was to start developing bilateral trade agreements to circumvent the dollar. So China was doing agreements with Brazil and the Middle East and Russia and, you know, and so forth. And so when they do those bilateral trade agreements, they're no longer conducting that trade through the dollar system. So we're seeing the exodus of, or the removal of the dollar as the world's reserve currency very informally at first. But according to Jim Willie, again, up to 40% of all international trade is being conducted outside of the dollar. So it's just a matter of time before the dollar is rejected totally as the world's reserve currency. The next step was to put a formal name to it. It's called the Euro-Asia Trade Zone. And then they created something called the BRICS Development Fund, which in reality is a nucleus of currencies that are coming together to form the new reserve currency to replace the dollar. In the meantime, all these countries are dumping their U.S. Treasury bonds that they've held for years because they were conducting business in dollars, and they're basically saying to the U.S. and England, either you buy these bonds and Treasury paper back or your currency collapses. So I really believe, Dr. Stan, we're in the beginning of the end game of this whole concept where the U.S. is about to be dethroned.
And I think that the average individual doesn't understand what's really going on. Why are so many of our major corporations moving overseas for production? Why we want them to? We intensely want them to. We've designed a tax structure so that if you move your corporation overseas, you don't have to pay any corporate income tax. If you bring the production back to America, you pay 35% tax. If you go overseas, you don't pay any corporate tax. Wouldn't you like to be able to do that? Invest overseas, not have to pay any taxes. But if you're a corporation, you do that. Why? Because the people who are running things really are in the process of undermining the fabric of our society. And the average individual doesn't understand. The corporations can't even bring the money back here and distribute it to their stockholders. Why? Because if they bring it back, they have to pay 35% tax on it. So they're leaving money overseas. In fact, one of the major corporations recently, I think it was Apple, issued a large number of bonds. And they issued those bonds so they could leave their money overseas. But they could actually pay a large dividend to their stockholders. That's what it was all about. That's what's going to happen to the money that suddenly Apple is going to get from issuing bonds. It'll go to their stockholders because they can't bring the money back here. Understand, everything is influenced by the tax laws, and they are designed to undermine the fabric of our nation. And you say, why would anybody in their right mind do that? Well, they have to understand we're not dealing with people in their right mind. We're people who are dealing with people whose loyalty is not to America, but to this globalist dream. And that's what it's all about. And the globalist dream, raising living standards throughout the world as you progressively lower and then eventually destroy living standards in America. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, believe me, the elite don't want to completely destroy America. They want to lower our living standards. They want to keep our country going because they need to use our financial and military power to bring about their world government, to dominate the world. But even they are getting a little bit worried about the way things are going with the massive debts that we have. And if you read Richard Haass's article in last week's Time magazine, he's talking to Sidney Richard Haass, member of the Trilateral Commission, president of the Council on Foreign Relations. And he simply points out that our current pattern of borrowing and government spending is unsustainable. And he calls for cutting back on our foreign investments and being having our military all throughout the world because he's saying we can't afford it. And he's absolutely right. But I don't think certainly if we even pull our troops back at this time, with the massive deficits that we have, $1 trillion a year deficit every year in the near future. Now, right now, they tell you how much money came in this last year, and it did. They made more money than they thought they would because of the change in tax laws. So everybody certainly has sold a lot of things, paid the capital gains tax last year, so that they won't, because it's going up this year. A lot of people certainly range their whole financial portfolios. They sold last year. They took a profit. But this coming year, believe me, there's going to be a marked cutback in the amount of money that people are going to have. And I think we're already beginning to see the prices going up. I notice when I go to the hardware store how dramatically prices are increasing. And certainly the price of food is increasing, the price of hardware is increasing, and even the price of homes is going up again. So basically, I think we're headed into a cataclysmic event. The average individual will tell you, oh, things are getting better, unemployment's down. And you look at those figures, yes, unemployment's down to something like 7.5%. But if you look at the unemployment figures, more people are unemployed out of work than ever before. So how could unemployment be going down and the number of people employed going up? Well, basically, I said the number of people unemployed going up. Well, basically because so many people have just dropped out of the labor market. And only if you're looking for a job or you're considered unemployed, you may be unemployed and giving up looking for work. You're no longer a figure, a statistic. And they say figures don't lie, but liars figure. They get well paid by the government to confuse us and to give us the impression things are getting better. But I don't think they are. I think Ron is absolutely right. We are still in a recession. And I don't see any means of coming out of it with the massive debts we have. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. And basically, of course, the economy of China is contracting. The economy is contracting all over Europe. And the economy is contracting here in the United States. Go right ahead, Ron.
Well, you know, let's go back to a quote we've given many times. Richard Gardner back in the early 70s, he was one of the members of the Trilateral Commission, which you just mentioned. And what he said is, what we must do is take an end run around national sovereignty, to erode it piece by piece, to raise the standard of living of the undeveloped countries of the world while we lower the standard of living in America so they can more comfortably be merged into a new world order. Now, if you had to look back in the past and say what has happened, that's exactly what they've been doing. Now, here's what I think is their problem. The kings of the West have created a monster in the East. And they've always thought they would maintain control, but the East is now pulling the plug on these Western bankers, and I think they're going to dethrone them. What's scary to me is that is our only hope in America. So
hold that thought. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California.
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer, God bless America. Beside her and guide her through the night with a light from above, from the mountains, through the prairie, through the ocean, white with gold.
Don't be late.
No.
White with gold. God bless America. My home.
Right, Pop? Right, son. Kind of makes you think of Blake, doesn't it? Makes you think of a lot of things. We're going to be in this yet, Mom.
Hello, son.
Hi, Mom.
Hello, darling.
New song?
Brand new, first time in the air.
Brand new, my eye. You know, I threw that song out of Yip Yip Yap Bang 22 years ago.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Ron Brown, and we're talking about what is going on financially. If you have a question, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I will tell you, we're living in very dangerous financial times. We're not going to come out of the current recession, or it's going to get much, much worse. There's going to be all sorts of problems, whether we're going to certainly have a war. I really can't tell you, but certainly we know certainly what happens in a war. We simply destroy the value of the currency, and then people can start in all over again. But people are so glad to be over the chaos of war that they're really not concerned about what happens. But those who've made proper certainly preparations survive, and the vast majority of the people lose almost everything they have. And if you're primarily invested in stocks or in bonds or in pension funds or in annuities, or certainly you have your money certainly in insurance policies to protect you, why, think again. Ron, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and what you think that they ought to be doing?
Well, my telephone number is 1-800-595-0561.
And could you speak up just a little bit louder? We just seem to be have a little weak connection. Go ahead.
1-800-595-0561. And, you know, you just hit it on the nose, Dr. Stan. The whole world monetary system is based on fiat and based on debt. And eventually, as that debt system keeps getting bigger and bigger and more unsustainable, eventually it has to collapse. And as it does, all paper assets have a third-party risk. You're dependent on someone to make do on their promise if you have a paper asset. And in a collapse, no one can honor their obligations. So you have to get the majority of your money out of paper assets. And, you know, it's starting to come into focus now is, you mentioned pension plans and so forth. We saw what's happening in Cyprus, where they just decided to take anything over $100,000 or whatever. In other words, the bankers are just stealing to try to keep the system collapsing. Well, anyone that thinks that they're not going to do the same thing with pension plans in this country, they're already making proposals. The one I remember is called the Guaranteed Retirement Act. And that basically says you have to put a certain percentage of your retirement funds in the government securities. So see, they have a printed press, they can guarantee that, but will it buy anything when you get it? So as we go into hyperinflation, as they keep printing money faster and faster and faster to keep the system from collapsing, all they're going to do is destroy the credibility and the purchasing power of paper money. But it's an illusion that people can't see, because if you're pumping all these hundreds of billions of dollars into the system, that money has to go somewhere. So it's been going into the stock market, because, and even the bond market, believe it or not. But that's an illusion, because if the economy isn't increasing, all these rises in stock prices and so forth, it's just hot air, and eventually it's going to implode on itself. So it's just, we're heading towards a major crash, and people need to start thinking, how do I survive it, instead of how do I really try to make money?
Well, you're going to have to speak up just a little bit louder, Ron. But basically, I think it's so vitally important that people really understand that the reason the stock market is going up is because the Federal Reserve System is pouring $85 billion a month into the economy. $40 billion, they're buying mortgage bonds from the banks. That's just to support the banks. Otherwise, the banks would collapse. They're putting another $45 billion directly into Treasury bills, buying up Treasury bills. Why? Because other people throughout the world don't want to buy our Treasury bills. In fact, I suspect that the Federal Reserve is giving money to other central banks throughout the world to buy up the Treasury bills. It said that probably why the Fed is buying about 75% of all Treasury bills, directly or indirectly. And if they didn't buy it, well, the Treasury would not have money to put out, to certainly put out the Social Security checks or the checks for food stamps or pay for Medicare. And basically, because none of these things are self-sustaining any longer, they're all going further and further behind. And so basically, of course, when you get into a situation like this, sooner or later, the whole thing begins to unravel. It's not a matter of if, but when. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 831-464-8295. 831-464-8295. But if you read last week's Time magazine, Richard Haass, president of the Council on Foreign Relations, member of the Trilateral Commission, has said that the current economic situation in the United States is not sustainable. He sounds just like Ron Brown or me, and basically when we all agree, you better start making your preparations. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY.
While a storm cloud gathers far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair, as we raise our voices in a solemn prayer. God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside and guide her through the night with a light from above, from the mountains to the prairies to the ocean, white with gold. God bless America, my home sweet home.
Guest this evening is Ron Brown, and Ron sells gold and silver. And if you want information why he's been at this game for a long time, now Ron, certainly at these ridiculously low prices, but certainly silver's down almost, well, almost 50%. It was almost up to $50 an ounce, and then of course it's now around $23 an ounce. Is silver readily available at those prices?
You know, it's amazing, Dr. Stan, either the economists are going to have to get together and rewrite the economic books on supply and demand, because the supply laws of supply and demand tell you if demand is increasing for something, the price should go up. And by the same token, if demand is dropping for something, the price should go down. So what do we have? We have gold and silver being manipulated and driven down from $35 an ounce silver just what, 3-4 months ago, down to as low as $22-$23, and yet the demand is just overwhelming. My dealer in Dallas, which is one of the biggest dealers in the country, has been out of silver bags to sell for 5 or 6 weeks. There are none. They've been out of Silver Eagles for about the same amount. They did just buy a big slug in the aftermarket, but they can't get any from the Mint. So how in the world can you justify the price of silver going down when the demand is just overwhelming all over the world? And by the same token, as you said earlier, no one really wants their bonds anymore, and yet interest rates are coming down, which means bond values are going up. So it's all manipulated, where the government has to create the illusion that gold is not something that's desirable. But seeing this last takedown, it totally backfired on, because instead of scaring people out of gold, everyone is running to the counter to buy gold all over the world. So I think this is just another indication that they're getting desperate and they're approaching the end game where they lose control of it.
Well, basically, what about the availability of gold? Is gold available at the present time? And what form is it available? And what does it actually cost? In other words, can people get it for the price that it's being bid at?
Well, you know, no one can ever buy gold at what's called the spot price. But, yeah, the gold has been available in the U.S. Eagles. Now, it hasn't been available in maple leaves and different forms of gold. But, for example, to give you an idea, in February, sale of gold eagles from the U.S. Mint was 80,500. A year ago, in the same month, it was 21,000. So that's an increase of 380%. And what's interesting, the same article said, well, the silver only jumped by 43%. Well, there's a good reason for that. The Mint stopped delivering. They haven't delivered any since late February, you know, March and April. So, yeah, the demand is just overwhelming, and the dealers across the country are just running out of anything to sell.
And I think, ladies and gentlemen, you can see this is all manipulated, just like the figures on unemployment, where they tell us the unemployment rate is going down, but there are more people unemployed or who are just not working. How can the unemployment rate be going down when, of course, there are more people not working? And it's simply they juggle the figures, and this is what they're doing with the price of gold and silver. They're playing games with our minds. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, if you have a question or comment for Ron, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And give us a call if you have a question for Ron. And Ron, once again, let's get your telephone number out and your website, or at least I don't think you have a website, but I think you refer people to other people's websites. But how can people get in touch with you?
My telephone number is 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561.
Well, now, certainly, are you getting a lot of calls from people at this time? I mean, I would think that certainly people would be frantically trying to get hold of gold and silver at this time. What is your response from your customers?
Yes. You know, January and February, I think I said on the program before, business was very slow. But once this takedown came in, it's just been overwhelming. So people are coming, and the big problem is trying to find something for them, especially the people who wanted silver. Because I went for 2, 3, 4 weeks where I really had no silver basically to sell. Another point I'd want to make is people look at the spot price of gold and silver and say it's down a certain percentage. Well, if you want to buy the real stuff, for example, silver bags, the old junk bags, if there were any available, you'd be paying close to 28-30% premium. So in other words, you're paying $27, $28 an ounce, while the spot price would be quoted at 22, 23 something.
So, now, what about things like silver bars? What about, are they available?
No, they haven't been, no. You know, it gets real spotty. Every now and then a dealer will come up with a few bars someone sold into the market. But even the 100-ounce bars have been back ordered 4, 5, 6 weeks.
I mean, that is just amazing. And you would think that certainly the average individual would understand that this is a totally manipulated market. That's a violation of the law. But, of course, since the people who run the banks own the government, it doesn't do any good to complain about it. The people, of course, who are behind this whole thing certainly aren't worried about the law at all. What they're doing is creating a perception that certainly the dollar is sound because the dollar value of the dollar is going up and the value of gold and silver is going down, whereas exactly the opposite should be the case. Would you agree?
Absolutely. In fact, what's interesting to watch is that, I've been doing this for 33 years. You've been doing it for longer than me, Dr. Stan, but I've always wondered how they keep kicking the can down the road and keep putting off the day of reckoning. But you'll notice that over the last 2-3 years, they're having to do ever more desperate things to keep the system from collapsing. And so it's becoming more and more obvious to more and more people that the system is corrupt. They're trying to come out of the system, and it gets all the rats are trying to get off the ship now. And I think we're about to see the greatest monetary scandal in the history of the world over the next several years as people tried to get their gold out of storage, only to find out that that gold was leased out or sold years ago, and the gold isn't there. You know, a lot of the experts say there's 100 ounces of paper gold and silver for every ounce of real gold and silver back. Can you imagine the scandal that's going to ensue? You know, we first started, remember 2 or 3 years ago when Venezuela demanded their gold? Now it's Germany and the Netherlands and Austria demanding their gold, and they're finding out that gold isn't there, which is making more and more people nervous. So you're seeing people trying to go to their banks, get rid of their exchange-traded funds to convert their paper positions into something real. And the reality is that by the time most Americans wake up, most of the gold and silver is not going to be in the West. It's going to be over in the East because it's been shipped over there very methodically at an accelerated pace for the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
And, of course, people actually say, well, maybe we're going to head into a cashless society, but they're not going to have that in China. China wants, of course, to have a gold-backed currency. They want to be the reserve currency of the world. And certainly when all the dollars that are all throughout the world, we're talking about trillions and trillions. We don't know how many trillions of dollars, 10, 20, 30 trillion dollars held by central banks and people throughout the world as the basis of their savings. And when suddenly the price of that drops and people begin to unload it, simultaneously it's going to create a run here that is going to be devastating and is simply going to impoverish the vast majority of the American people. Those people who have not made preparations, what percentage of our population do you think has actually made preparations for what's coming down the line? Before you answer that, let me put our telephone number out. If you have a question for Ron, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But what percentage of people do you think have actually made some preparations for the coming financial apocalypse?
I don't know about you, Dr. Stan, but I would be surprised if 5% of the people have made preparations of any sort. Because when you start trying to figure out how to plan for this, it's scary. It's just frightening because let's say you decide to put some food storage away. Well, you can put enough for maybe you and your wife and your family, but what about your neighbors? What about your relatives? All the people that know what you're doing, can you store enough food to feed the whole block? So once you start trying to plan for it, it gets overwhelming, and most people just back off because there's not much I can do about it.
Well, if you're out there, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I'm going to ask my producer to call you back, Ron. Maybe we can get a better line because your voice keeps fading. So if you wouldn't mind hanging up, and I'll ask our producer to go ahead and call you back, okay?
Okay,
fine. And so let's hope we get the Ron back on the line with a better city, because I think what he's saying is so vitally important. We are entering a time of cataclysmic events financially, and I've been following these things for 50 years. I got started in this whole sequence back in 1962, and we've seen so many things happen during this period of time. But basically, of course, it's so vitally important that you understand that we have lived in a utopian world, but that utopian world is going to begin to collapse because we do not have a sound monetary system. And basically, you destroy the monetary system, you destroy the nation. And this has happened time and time again. It happened to ancient Greece. It happened to Cerenzi, happened to ancient Rome. It happened to ancient, certainly to Spain. It happened to France. It happened to Great Britain. And certainly prior to the First World War, Great Britain was the dominant financial country in the world, and even through the Second World War. But by the end of the Second World War, Great Britain had massive debts, and basically she couldn't pay them off. And suddenly the leadership of the world transferred to the United States, which was the greatest creditor in the world. We were the greatest creditor nation in the world, and we remained that until about 10 years ago. Today, we are the largest debtor nation in the world, and people don't understand that when nations owe debts, they have to pay interest on those debts, and pretty soon all the money that's coming in, rather than going out for social welfare and for the military, why it has to go to pay the interest on the debt, and eventually the whole system ends up collapsing. And I think that this is certainly the way it looks like it's going. Ron, what are your thoughts?
Well, exactly. You know, after World War II, and the dollar was declared the world's reserve currency, which put us in a very enviable position. Everyone had to conduct trade through dollars, and so everyone had to accumulate dollars, which allowed us as a nation to spend way beyond our means because foreigners were standing in line to finance our folly. But at some point, as that debt structure gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and people start to see what's happening, start to try to break away, and then we have to use the power of the military to keep people in line. In other words, whenever any nation tries to build a world empire, eventually the world has to start coming together to resist it. And that's what we've been witnessing over the last 5-10 years, and that's what this BRICS country and this BRICS Development Fund is all about, as these countries combine together. In fact, I read something that said there's up to 200 countries that are going into that alliance. So the whole world is coming together to stand against these megalomaniacs in the U.S., these bankers, and they're going to pull the system down. And I don't think there's any doubt that that's what's coming down.
All right. Well, I certainly share your concern about this. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment for Ron Brown, who's been in this business for well over 30 years selling gold and silver, and as he says, you know, you can buy silver, but there's no silver to be had. But did you take orders for silver at the present time, or do you just tell people that we can't get it? What are people doing? Are they buying it now with the idea that they be able to get it in 6 weeks or what?
Well, I won't even take an order if it's back ordered over a week, because you see, when I take an order for someone, I have to collect money up front. And so I'm responsible for that money until I deliver it. If we're looking at 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks back order, and I'm accumulating all this client's money in my account that I'm responsible for, this banking system is so fragile, who knows what's going to happen. And of course, when you look at this rehypothecation scandal, what happened in Cyprus, where they just come in and take money in account, I don't want to be responsible for that. So, and by the way, you know, going back to my scenario, what eventually is going to happen is that the kings of the East are going to force these Western bankers to default on their naked short contracts on the COMEX. But that's going to have more implications than people see, because, see, if you're a dealer in this business, and let's say someone comes in to buy $100,000 worth of gold from a dealer, the dealer's like a bookie. He doesn't want to take any side of the transaction, so he uses the futures market to hedge his position. If the futures market shuts down and is discredited, then the dealers have no way to hedge their position, which will make doing business very, very difficult. So I just tell people, I'd rather get my gold and silver 2 years too early than one day too late. So when this thing hits the fan, it's very difficult. It's kind of possible to do that.
Okay, well, let's go to Joe calling from New Jersey. Hi, Joe. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I'd just like to share something with both you fellas from Scripture. It's the second chapter of Daniel. And what Ron Brown was just mentioning about how the nations of the world are gathering together to resist the takeover of their freedom and their sovereignty. And I think, well, you know, I could be wrong, but then again, Scripture does relate to our time, I guess. And in the second, if you read the second chapter of Daniel, towards the end of the chapter, just to give you a gist of it, I won't read the passage, but it says during where it says when Daniel interprets Nebuchadnezzar's dream of the big statue, and he gets down to the feet, he says, where you, Nebuchadnezzar, saw in the vision the feet, part of iron and part of clay, and he goes on to say, well, the feet of iron and the feet of clay is that part of the statue where, how the heck did he put it, like, the iron will not mix with miry clay. So it sounds like to me, the iron, if you also notice in scripture, it always mentions how the iron has to do with Satan. And here is Satan trying to mingle with the seed of men, and they shall not cleave together, even as iron does not mix with miry clay. So it sounds like this whole system is coming down, like you said, Ron.
I think you're absolutely right, Joe. Appreciate that. The importance certainly behind everything going on today are powerful spiritual forces. Our guest certainly is Ron Brown. If you have a question or comment, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And our plea to you is begin to make your preparations for the difficult times that lie ahead. And remember, behind everything are powerful spiritual forces. And unless you understand that we live in a spiritual world, they try to make you think that isn't true, but we really do. And you better make your preparations accordingly. You can just say everything's happening by accident, normal economic laws, or you can understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out on the financial battlefield. We're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up the program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Ron, what are your parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, you know, just to follow up on what you were saying and the caller said, is throughout history, God has used what we would call so-called evil nations to bring his people back on their knees and back to him. And you can go back to Egypt or Babylon or even Rome, and you look at what's happening in the West today. Totally controlled by these megalomaniacs in the banking system who have this appetite to create their own world government. The system is so corrupt, they've miseducated people for the last 50, 60 years. They control the legal system. They control the money system. They control just about everything. So it's very difficult for us to turn it around internally. But what I see happen is the kings of the East are going to turn against their masters who created them, and they're going to the ones that are going to pull down these bankers. So who knows what that's going to bring. It's going to bring chaos, but maybe that will give hope to turn it back to its original roots.
Well, certainly I think the world that we've known is going to cease to exist, and people don't like to think about that. I love this world we've lived in. I've lived in a very comfortable and prosperous country, certainly for 84 years, but I think that's all going to change. How soon is it going to change? I don't know. How is it going to change? I don't know. But I do know that God has a plan, and I think we're going to see this enacted. But in the meantime, we have to try to survive and certainly do the best we can for ourselves, for our families, for our neighbors, and I think we have an obligation to warn people what lies ahead from a monetary point of view, though recognizing the spiritual component of what's taking place. Do you have a parting thought before we let you go, Ron?
Oh, you know, we've been covering it all. I think we're called as Christians and citizens to seek the truth. And the truth is that when you seek it, it scares you to death, and the only hope is to turn stronger into faith. And that's what God has to do, to bring us back to him. So I think that's process that's happening right now.
I certainly concur, and our job, of course, is to stand on the wall and sound the alarm, hoping that people are heeding, hoping that people are listening. Why don't you just hang on here for a moment? I'll let, as soon as the stations come back on board, why, we'll get your telephone number out one more time. So hang on, Ron, just for a moment.
Let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair.
this is Dr. Stan. And Ron, before we let you go, let's get your telephone number out one more time in case people would like to get in touch with you and learn more about the current gold and silver and precious metals market. How can they reach you once more?
1-800-595-0561. 1-800-595-0561.
Okay, good night. God bless. We'll talk to you later.
Always a pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Okay, this is Dr. Stan. This is the time when I need to remind our listeners out across America that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported, and quite frankly, we're dependent upon those of you out there in the listening audience who listen to us and hopefully learn from us to keep us on the air. We have over 50 channels every week, but they've got to be supported financially. So if you're in a position to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, get our four best tapes of the month and our monthly newsletter. You can subscribe to our newsletter, or you can get the books and videos and DVDs and four CD sets and tape sets that we offer. Or you can get certainly the health products or these spices or the other items we offer, Berkey products or Miracle 2 soap products. Or certainly whatever you'd like to do to help. If you'd like to become part of our team, we'd certainly appreciate it because we want to be able to be here as long as we can, warning people and certainly hopefully turning some people into Christians, leading them to understand that we live in terrible times and the only real security any of us has is our personal relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ. We may lose all of our physical possessions, but hopefully the Lord will be there to protect us in one way or another. And if we should pass away, at least we know we'll spend eternity. So remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. You can watch our DVDs, certainly listen to our radio programs, read our newsletters. And then, of course, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. That's the Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get our four CD set and DVD on the threat of an EMP attack. You need to certainly get our DVD, a four-tape set on geoengineering. Basically, they will take you into chemtrails, what they're doing to alter the weather. We also have a DVD called Weather Warfare, and then we have a DVD called What in the World Are They Spraying? And another one on What in the World Are They Spraying? And Why in the World Are They Spraying? The two separate DVDs, but if you're only going to get one, get the one on geoengineering. And then, of course, if you want to understand so much of the history, we cover all aspects of history with our various tape sets, if you'd like to get a catalog, or in our CD sets, if you'd like to get a catalog, this call is at 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to know how they brought down the Twin Towers, you need to get our two four tape sets on 9/11. I think they're probably in CD. And then we have another CD set in Why Do the Buildings Come Down, where I interview actually Sergeant Leo Chavez, who was at CENTCOM headquarters on the morning of the September 11th attack. He'll give you an entirely different story of what happened, and I have never been able to contact him since that program. He just simply disappeared after that. We also have the gentleman, the other 2 hours on that Why Did the Buildings Come Down set was the man who was in charge, certainly, of actually cleaning up the debris. That was his job after controlled demolitions. And he told me that he was 99% certain Building 7 was a controlled demolition. If that's true, it means that the Twin Towers were controlled demolitions, and they simply murdered those almost 3,000 people in the Twin Towers and the Pentagon. Well, please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, our provision, and our protection.
While the storm clouds gather, far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with a light.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Christian civilization and Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, I'm hoping they're going to be the views of F. William Engdahl, who's written a wonderful book on A Century of War. And let's see, I think we have Mr. Engdahl on the line right now. Mr. Engdahl, are you there?
I'm here. I'm having some internal phone problems here, but we're finally hooked up. So.
Well, I'm so glad we are. Well, I've just been reading your book, A Century of War. And basically, of course, this is a book that was written initially in 1991. It was actually rewritten and re-released in 2011. And it simply goes into the background of the forces that are at work in the world, of the forces that control the oil price and the banking and the finances and the military, of people who really run the world, which, of course, is not what we are told by the media, but there really is a small group that Mr. Engdahl certainly covers. And I'm going to let you tell our listeners about this book. It's a fascinating book.
Well, you're doing a pretty good job.
Well, I read the book, you see, so I can do a pretty good job. Go right ahead.
Yeah. The idea for the book came back in the period of 1991 when Bush administration, Bush Sr. had just launched the war against Iraq, the first war, Operation Desert Shield, and a small publisher who's no longer existing here in Germany asked me if I would write a book on these big oil companies and the oil and these wars in the Middle East and so forth. And I said, well, I don't know. I've never written a book. I've written a lot of things, but never a book. And I began to research and what... First, I said, well, to understand what the relation is between oil and the misuse of power, you have to kind of go back to the beginning. So I took it back to the dawn of the petroleum age, if you will, when the British Navy, the Royal Navy in the 1890s, thereabouts, made the decision. It was Winston Churchill as Vice Lord of the Admiralty, who played a key role in it later, and Jack Fisher, Admiral Jack Fisher, who's the key person who understood that If a country's navy would shift from coal-fired propulsion to oil-fired, they would have an enormous military advantage. It's much lighter, you know, the carrying weight of oil versus coal. You have much more mobility, et cetera, et cetera. So this was obviously the way to go because Britain ruled the seas and they saw Germany coming up on the horizon with its building up its navy, and its industry was already overshadowing the British steel industry and so. And the background of how oil played a role in not just World War I, World War II, but virtually every war since, because certain powerful families who controlled the oil, and I'll mention Rockefeller among them, and interests in the British realm. The British government actually owned Iranian, the Anglo-Persian Oil Company, which later became BP. So the way that this interweaves, that the excuses for wars are manipulated by media that these powerful interests control.
Well, no, basically, is it the British government that controls the BP, or is it the British monarchy? Are they one and the same?
Well, the actual shareholders today, I think it's mixed, but it's you have this model of private companies, certain private corporations. There are 150 of them, I think, essentially, as I see it in the research that I've looked at. 147, 150 giant corporations with the financial groupings of Wall Street, City of London, Boston at the top of that pyramid, and through shareholdings.
Hold that thought.
Yeah.
Please go right ahead. I hate to interrupt you, but the computer tells me what to do. You go right ahead. They were just saying that we have this almost 150 major corporations that through their shareholders. They more or less dominate the economics of the world. Is this the point we were going to make? Mr. Engdahl, are you there? Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, go right ahead. No, basically the point you were making, there's almost 150 major corporations, and they really sort of dominate the world scene. Let's pick up the story.
Yeah, well, these 150 odd corporations, they have more power than elected governments anywhere in the world, I would say, almost today. There are a few exceptions. China, perhaps, although it's touch and go there now. There's a huge fight internally in China with the new government against corruption, and the corruption comes from the foreign direct investment from these multinationals, these 150 corporations over the last three decades. But China is resisting. There's strong resistance there. Russia is resisting. The Yeltsin years back in the 90s was simply a looting of the crown jewels of Russia by dollar-backed interests that hooked up with Russian business partners and tried to just destroy that country. But under Putin, there's been a strong move to nationalist move. It's a heavy fisted move, but it's a difficult situation that he faces. But to resist this, this one world order, whatever you want to call it, whatever name you want to give it, but it's the order of these 150 corporations. And once you understand, or we understand how that control works on this private level, then the fact that governments, Congress is bought and paid for by this interest group or that interest group, Monsanto or what will you, it becomes clearer because Monsanto is one of these 150 corporations that are in this power pyramid. And it's basically a top-down process that's destroying the world step by step. So we have to decide if we want to continue going down that road because of all their nice public relations images that they project, or we want to look behind the screen. So that's basically what I tried to do in The Century of War, and I've done in my other books. There's a new release that I have on the theme of oil from a different angle, but it's equally as fascinating, called Myths, Lies, and Oil Wars, about the myth of oil scarcity and how that's been used to keep that control. The war in Syria today has...
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest is F. William Engdahl. We're talking about his book, A Century of War, but he has a number of other books, certainly, which will help you to understand what's really going on. And I think the point that he makes is nothing as it appears to be. The 150 major corporations, they all and I suspect they all, many of them interlock with one another. But basically, this is the financial source that really rules the world. Oh, we have governments. We talk about democracy. We talk about certainly wanting to improve the lot of the people over there. And in the Arab countries, we talk about the Arab Spring. We talk about certainly representative government. And it's all a lie. Would that be a fair assessment?
That's a fair assessment in my reading of it. The Arab Spring is really the Arab nightmare. It was initiated by the Pentagon and by the U.S. State Department as a project that's been on the books for well over a decade. And the idea is to create chaos across the Islamic world from Afghanistan, really, if you want to go back a few years, from Afghanistan through Pakistan down into Iran, Syria, Libya, and so forth. And there's a huge component of playing the Saudis against the Iranians. The Saudis are fundamentalist Sunni brand of Islam, and the Iranians are conservative Shia. And the Iranians gained a huge influence in Iraq after the U.S. not so wisely got rid of Saddam Hussein and the Ba'ath Party. And then you had a power fight break out, and 60% of the Iraqi population is Shia. So naturally, the prime minister, elected prime minister, democratically elected, is Shia. So that gives Iran a little bit of influence with its neighbor that it didn't have with Saddam Hussein. And then Syria is dependent on its relationship. Bashar al-Assad, the president of Syria, he's an Alawite Muslim, but they're historically very close to Iran. And now they have a pipeline agreement for a gas pipeline going from the Persian Gulf on Iran's side, through Iran, down through Iraq and into Syria, where it would go on to either Lebanon or one of the Syrian ports, and bring gas into the European Union. And that just happens to run smack up against a competing gas pipeline project that the Emir of Qatar has for his side of the Persian Gulf. It's the same geological formation, this huge gas field, the largest perhaps in the world, larger than some of the Russian fields. And so the Emir of Qatar is financing these terrorists. They're nothing but terrorists that are going in there. I was told by a journalist when I was in Tehran several months ago that he was in Syria and he interviewed some of these terrorists, and he said they're given training over the border in Turkey, and Kalashnikovs or rifles, whatever, hand grenades, or even worse weapons, and $100 cash a day, and told to just go in and shoot up civilians, men, women, children, it doesn't matter, to create terror and then blame it on the government. So the idea is to just make Syria ungovernable so that this gas pipeline between Iran and Iraq and Syria does not see the light of day.
Well, so, basically, of course, the question in my mind is, who is funding the terrorists there? Is it the Turks? I've always thought it was probably the CIA or some one of our own organizations. I've heard that there are special forces units in both Jordan and in Turkey that were training, funding, and financing the terrorists. Is there any truth to that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This seems to be no question about that. But the main role is it's these days with the budget austerity in the Pentagon, so-called. They're outsourcing wars. The Pentagon is outsourcing their wars. You know, this is the era of outsourcing everything. And they've outsourced it to Turkey, to a certain degree to France, and because France historically sees Syria as its colony, but going back to World War I. And they've outsourced it. The main source of money, by all accounts, is Qatar. So the Arab oil and gas money is mainly gas in Qatar, is being used to finance these terrorists.
So, but don't you really believe that that neither Saudi Arabia nor Qatar would be helping to finance the rebels if we weren't solidly behind them?
Oh yeah, no question about it. But the irony of the situation is because of the rock hard resistance of Russia. China, to a lesser extent, but they've refused to sanction. UN Security Council votes against Iraq against Syria, but Iran and Russia have formed an iron phalanx of resistance, and it's outflanking Washington. They didn't expect that, and that it would be so determined. But for Russia, it's a game breaker. If they lose their influence in Syria, they lose their only port on the Mediterranean, naval port. The Russian, since the collapse of the Soviet Union, the Russian military profile has been dramatically reduced, and it's Russia's geopolitical necessity to keep a naval presence in the Mediterranean that they can protect their energy pipeline, flow lines and so forth.
Well, I certainly agree with you totally. Well, look, let's sort of go back in your book, The Century of War, because you really start out sort of before World War One. You go into the backgrounds of Cecil Rhodes and his secret group that were intent upon creating this great British empire that would dominate the world. And obviously, you've read Professor Quigley and his writings, as you're very well informed. It's a fascinating book, and I really have enjoyed it. But why don't you sort of take it in sequence? And for our listeners out there, who have not done all of the reading and studying and pointing out certainly how all of these wars have been manipulated and contrived. But you go ahead and tell the story, because I'm sure you can do it far better than I can.
Well, the British Empire actually, and I go into this in my new book, Myths, Lies, and Oil Wars, and another book, Gods of Money, Wall Street and the Death of the American Century, which came out about 3 years ago. 2010, actually, that the period between 1914 and 1945, if we want to look at it as what really was going on, not the romantic accounts of the history books we get in school, no matter what schools, it was a power struggle as to who would replace the decaying or collapsing British Empire, whether it would be the German Empire under the Kaiser back in World War One, under Hitler in World War II, or it would be the Americans. And the Americans don't like to think of themselves as an empire, and that's something that the elites who kind of formulated policy on this took into account, and therefore they called what emerged from World War II the spreading of democracy, freedom, the American way of life, the free enterprise system, and all these good, nice-sounding adjectives that led people around the world to think American foreign policy was going to save them, when in fact what the powerful interests, the 150 corporations or the Wall Street interests really, what they were doing was using big oil as the vehicle, creating an empire of their own, a private empire, and using the U.S. Pentagon and the U.S. State Department to defend their private interests. So anything that the Russians or the Soviets might have tried to do in the Middle East in this Cold War period, you have the Carter Doctrine that this becomes an act of war. Suddenly protecting the oil flows of the Middle East, no matter which countries, is something that America would go to war for. This is purely these private interests that want to control energy. And there's a quote that I used in the book from Henry Kissinger back purportedly in the 70s when he was the most powerful man in Washington, in government, that is, as Secretary of State and Security Council advisor to President Nixon, who was under Watergate pressures. Kissinger said at the time the first oil shock, and there was he said that if you control the oil, you can control entire nations. If you control, now who does he mean by you? Of course, he's a protege of David Rockefeller and the whole powerful oil complex behind the Rockefeller Group, and that's who he had in mind. That control allows him to raise the price of oil by 400%, as they did in 1973 in a manipulated situation with the Yom Kippur War, deliberately arming Israel one-sided against the protests of the Saudi king at the time, who said that you're interfering massively into our affairs here. Kissinger orchestrated that, and he knew it would lead to a war, and he knew that war would lead to an embargo from the Saudis and from OPEC, because they denounced it quite dramatically and personally in diplomatic envoys to Washington, that would be their only recourse. And therefore, you had a 400% increase in the oil price. Well, Kissinger and several powerful interests, including David Rockefeller, were involved in orchestrating that. I go through it in great detail in the book.
You didn't. I enjoyed it. But the point that you make is that the reason they were doing that was because they thought that would actually allow certainly the extended discovery of oil in the North Sea and elsewhere. And the rise in the price of oil would encourage certainly the excess of oil. And of course, then you point out that this whole idea of peak oil really isn't true at all. And I think that is so vitally important. But at that time, I remember remember the talk about peak oil. I can remember the advertisements on television. It showed dinosaurs. And it said, you know, the world is running out of dinosaurs. There are no more dinosaurs. We're running out of oil. And, you know, it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough and loud enough and convincing enough, people will believe. Yeah. Really, people believed that at the time, and I wondered, how gullible can people really believe? Do they really believe that all the oil in the world came from dinosaurs? And I think a lot of them still do. We'll be back in just a moment here with a special guest this evening, right here at Radio Liberty. Go right ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a commercial break. Sorry. Yeah, you have to ask how all these dead dinosaurs managed to congregate in a tiny little corner of the desert in Saudi Arabia and produce all the oil that they've had over the years, with no signs of that declining. All the oil that we're finding almost everywhere where there's serious exploration going on in the world is just coming up everywhere. So oil does not originate from dead dinosaurs or algae or trees. Biological material. That is one of the biggest frauds that these powerful interests promoted. Going back to the 1880s, from evidence that I have from a international chemical conference, that they classified oil as a so-called fossil fuel, as a biological origin. But they've never, in any scientific experiment, proven how hydrocarbons emerge from dead dinosaurs. I've tried to find it. There was a period back during the 2003 when George W. Bush launched the buildup to the war on Iraq that I thought perhaps his peak oil had some validity, and I tried to find the scientific proof for peak oil. And as I dug and researched, I realized I'd made a horrible mistake. I wrote an article called The Confessions of an Ex-Peak Oil Believer, explaining why I no longer held that view. But
of course, at the end of the last chapter of your book, why you, of course, bring out the fact that this, of course, comes from deep within the earth and it's primordial. The source is oil and certainly natural gas, having nothing to do with the dinosaurs. I thought that was so vitally important that you brought that out in your book.
Well, I'm in touch with some of the scientists who, during the Cold War in Soviet Union, they were commissioned by the government, by Stalin, actually going back to the 50s, to make Russia energy independent, because he understood, brutal as he was, he understood in military terms, if the Soviet Union was dependent on the West for its basic energy flows, they wouldn't have a chance to survive. So the Russians looked at all the scientific literature in the West. They started laughing when they read the American geology textbooks. You don't even have to be a physicist or study physics to have a professorate in geology in the United States. They prefer, I suspect, that you don't have any background in physics or chemistry, that you just look at rocks. But what they found was, where they put forward a hypothesis that oil's origins were deep in the core of the earth, which is a gigantic, if you want, gigantic oven that's constantly burning. The earth is expanding, and as it expands, there are tiny little fissures or cracks in the mantle of the earth, the next layer of the ball, as you go upwards toward the surface. And those cracks through the mantle allow gas to come through, and then it goes through different chemical elements, layers in the earth, around the world, and goes upward as far until it gets trapped into a solid rock formation that fills up with oil. And these are what are called oil fields. And it's not dead dinosaurs. You have oil fields that go down miles into the earth. Now, dinosaurs don't just naturally disintegrate after their death on the surface of the earth and their heavy weight bringing them miles into the toward the core of the earth.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Arthur Stan. Our guest is William Engdahl. We're talking about, I said, the origin of oil, and he brings this out very well in his book that basically, of course, oil does not come from dead dinosaurs, as I was taught in college. Oil certainly comes from natural gas, methane, down in the very core of the earth, works itself towards the surface, goes through chemical changes, and becomes methane, becomes oil. And this has to do with bacterial decompensation of the methane. But certainly this is the source of oil, contrary to everything we've been told. But the whole idea of peak oil is simply to confuse you. But of course, it's used to justify all of these the military activities that America's involved in today. But you control the oil. You control the countries. You control the world. And what most people don't want to admit is that America has an empire. This is the real goal. We're not interested in democracy. We're not interested, certainly, in helping people throughout the world, although we try to give this impression, oh, we're so concerned about people throughout the world. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, it's simply for the consumption of the American people. The vast majority of the people throughout the world live in poverty today, and although we've raised somewhat the living standards in India and certainly in China, there's still billions of people who, you know, a billion people who probably live on $1 to $2 every day on average in the world. But you go right ahead, please.
Yeah. Well, I would say it's not America's an empire. It's this private elite, these 150 corporations that I keep mentioning. This private elite has used America as a platform. They've, over the course of their policies the last 30 years, the so-called free market policies, they've deregulated government, they've taken government out of the controls that were put on Wall Street during the Great Depression, rightly so. Glass-Steagall and some of these things were removed in 1999 by the same people who were calling the shots, or initially calling the shots in the Obama administration today, Tim Geithner and Larry Summers. In the Treasury, and the Treasury has always been controlled by Wall Street, almost without exception in American history. So this private elite has simply hijacked government. They've deregulated, taken government out of any role for the broader public, and made it a tool of their private interests. So that is the empire. It's like the British East India Company, a private crown corporation with the military power of the British Empire to back up its private looting of India and other places, the opium wars against China, to crack open China for their looting operations and so forth. That's the model.
And of course, England did then, of course, loot China and India, those other countries, until, of course, the end of the Second World War, when America really became the dominant political force in the world. And of course, England had a massive debt at that time, something like $4 or $5 billion. Of course, when we look at the debts today, that is absolutely nothing. And yet, of course, the debt is what I think today threatens the very survival of our civilization as we know it. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I couldn't agree more. I sometimes shock my audiences when I give a speech in around Europe or wherever it is, China, England. I say, we don't live under something called capitalism. I have yet to find a definition of capitalism as a closed economic system. What we live under is debt slavery, and it's a system that goes back some 5,000 years, back to the Phoenicians, the Babylonians, and so on. And this debt slavery takes different political forms over different periods of time. In the Middle Ages, in the medieval period, it worked through monarchies. So you had private banking interests, whether it be the Fugger in Germany financing the King of Spain, because the Spanish Empire was the biggest player on the block at that point. And then other banking interests emerged that financed the British or the Dutch initially, and then later the British, as they emerged as a naval power, and the city of London became the center of it. But they developed the idea of political power parties, so-called democracy or representative democracy, in order to keep secret the power of the private banking interests as the string puller behind essentially everything.
Well, I guess just as William Engdahl, we're talking about his book, A Century of War. That is a vitally important summary of basically all the wars of the last century, which has all been contrived. And of course, as the coming wars, I fear, are going to be involved in the Middle East are going to be contrived. But the wars certainly had destroyed Great Britain, once the dominant force in the world. And the old saying was that a sun never set on the British Empire. And yet the British Empire was certainly destroyed because it went bankrupt. And the same thing, I fear, is going to be happening here in America before long. We're going to be back in just a moment here as we continue our analysis of the Century of War.
While a storm cloud gathers far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair, as we raise our voices in a solemn prayer.
Well, how can people get hold of your books?
The easiest way to get hold of the books is through my website, williamengdahl.com. It's very simple. It's my first name, William, and then Engdahl with nothing in between, William, E-N-G-D-A-H-L.com. And all of the books are listed there. You can order them through CreateSpace. That helps me a little bit more on paying the rent and my bills because I'm completely independent of any sponsors, and necessarily so I can say what I think is needs to be said, or they can order them direct from Amazon.com. That's another way.
You can
also order them through major bookstores. The wholesalers carry the book.
And you live in Wiesbaden?
I live in Frankfurt in Germany. Yeah.
I see. Okay, Fran. I remember Frankfurt very fondly when I was in the military back in 1953, 1954, where we spent a lot of time there, but I'm sure it's changed in the last 60 years.
Oh, it's changed enormously. Now you have all these big banks up here making trouble.
Okay. Well, I said, yeah, but I think your message is vitally important, that people have to begin to see the world as it really is rather than as we wish it were. And all the idealism that they talk about, and President Bush talking about, wants to help people throughout the world. And this idea of we want to bring democracy and freedom to the downtrodden people throughout the world. And this is the height of hypocrisy, as you point out.
Yeah. Yeah. Indeed it is. Well, it's powerful interests throughout history have always used propaganda to justify their missions. And, the methods, the techniques have become more refined. There is a man who was in Wilson's secret advisory group on propaganda called Edward Bernays, a nephew of Sigmund Freud. And he essentially created Madison Avenue Advertising after World War I. But he and the people around him came up with the propaganda slogan that confused the American public about why they should go to war across the sea in something that in no way, shape, or form directly threatened the security of the United States of America.
Hold that thought. Hold the thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, William Engdahl. We're talking about his book, A Century of War. And he's talking how Edward Bernays, who is Sigmund Freud's nephew, had suddenly created the slogan for World War I. I think it was something about
to make the world safe for democracy.
The war to make the world safe for democracy, right. It was a wonderful, wonderful slogan. It had nothing to do with it, but it was a slogan repeated often enough. People really believe that. The other one was, this is the war to end all wars.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
war to end all wars. See, isn't that
World
wonderful? And our boys went over to Europe. We lost 120,000 servicemen in World War I, in a war that we had no interest in at all. And we went over there because of the propaganda that was used, the atrocity stories. Oh, they love these atrocity stories of the wicked Huns cutting off the hands of little Belgians. Belgian boys and the breasts, the Belgian women with the bayonets. It was all a lie. I never remember years ago, 50 years or so ago, talking to a gentleman who had volunteered for World War One, and he said he, by the time they got to Belgium, most of the friends that he'd been with his unit were dead. And then to get to Belgium and find there weren't any little boys with their hands cut off. There weren't any Belgian women with their breasts cut off. And here he'd joined, he'd fought, and his friends had died, and it was all a lie. It was all a lie.
Yeah, and Edward Bernays' group was the one who was responsible for the propaganda. I go through this in great detail because the intermix between the power of the military and the power of Wall Street is essential to understand. In my book, The Gods of Money, the true background to World War One and World War Two, not just the oil, but the money power. There's the other part of this quote from Kissinger that I cited at the beginning is, if you control oil, you control whole nations. If you control food, and that's my book, Seeds of Destruction, The Hidden Agenda of Genetic Manipulation. If you control food, you control the people. If you control money, you control the entire world. And that's where you have to look, follow the money. Where is the center of money power? Federal Reserve, the private Federal Reserve Act of 1913 was rammed through by the house of J.P. Morgan, at that time the most powerful banking interest on the face of the earth. It later was supplanted by the Rockefeller Banking Group after 1931 when the British left the gold standard. Interestingly enough, you mentioned Carol Quigley's Tragedy and Hope, a brilliant book. I know from one of his ex-students that he was at Georgetown University where he taught Bill Clinton, among others. He was feared for his life that he didn't reveal too much about how these powerful private interests really work. But one omission in Quigley's book, as condition for being allowed to look at the private archives of the Council on Foreign Relations, Quigley was told by the people at the CFR, you are to mention nothing in your book about the Rockefeller family. So if you go back and look in the index, there's one mention, I think, of Nelson Rockefeller in a completely harmless context. You would think a family by the name of Rockefeller had no influence whatsoever on U.S. Policies, whereas they emerged from the Great Depression within the administration of FDR, Roosevelt, as the most powerful lobby influence. And after 1939, the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Council on Foreign Relations were more or less all singing the same song, and it was how to extend the power of this Rockefeller family globally as the heart of the empire.
I always have to smile, you know, when they tell us Bill Gates, the wealthiest man in the world, Warren Buffett, the wealthiest man in the world, and they rattle off a few of them, and they never mention the Rockefellers, who, I mean, certainly Warren Buffett might have maybe $40 billion, and Bill Gates have $60 billion. Certainly the Rockefellers have really hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars, and we never talk about that. It's the most amazing control. They really largely control what the American people think and believe.
Well, Bill Gates, David Rockefeller, and Warren Buffett are all members of the same club. They're intimate friends. They pool their interests to work as one, and that's the thing to understand, this kind of interlocking directorate at the top of the pyramid. And it's nothing really that mysterious. You don't have to get into hocus pocus or Illuminati or this and that. There's some madmen at the top of this power pyramid who want to destroy most of humankind, and I find that personally uncomfortable. So I think it's my humble task in this on this earth is to try to explain how that's happening so that ordinary people can defend themselves and protect their families and try to create a better world.
Well, I think you do an excellent job in your book. This is the first book of yours that I've read, A Century of War, but I think it gets into the background of certainly of all of the wars. You go into just how they're all contrived, and certainly we go from war to war. Each one is contrived, and the American people go right along with it, and nothing's ever done to the people who lie to create this. You talk about how they got us into the first Gulf War, that story, there's this this war.
Well, it's like the Belgian.
About that story, how they used that to get us into
war. Yeah, it's like the Belgian. They took it from the same script book that they did the fraudulent Belgian babies with the bayonet, German bayonets. They brought a young woman who claimed she was a nurse in an Iraqi or in a Kuwaiti hospital, brought her into Congress, a PR firm that was working for the Kuwaiti government at the time, a PR firm with ties to the CIA, I should add. And this young woman started testifying about how she was the nurse in the incubation room where these newborn babies were that weren't strong enough to, live without incubators, and that the Iraqi soldiers would come in and pick up these babies and stab them with bayonets and throw them on the floor dead. And she started weeping very convincingly. And so turned out later she was the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador to Washington. The whole thing was a put up by Papa Bush and friends in the CIA.
And they needed the excuse to get us into Gulf War One, and that was the excuse. And then,
that was the excuse. Gulf War Two, the excuse was Al Qaeda and this character that the CIA trained back during the Mujahideen times, called Osama bin Laden, who's supposedly holed up in a cave somewhere in Bora Bora in the mountains of Afghanistan. But that didn't matter. Saddam Hussein, who hated Al Qaeda as a fanatical Muslim, Saddam Hussein was a Arab socialist. He was a secularist. He didn't have any truck with organized religion as a political force. In fact, he was suppressed it in Iraq brutally. So suddenly he was, we got confused somewhere along the line between Tora Bora and Baghdad. And the propaganda was that Saddam Hussein is the new Adolf Hitler. And we gullibly went with this. The patriotic drums were pounding and we didn't realize it had nothing to do with anything the government was claiming, that somehow this was connected with the war on terror and 9/11 and then the myths of these weapons of mass destruction that it turned out never existed. And that was admitted after the bombing and destruction of Iraq. Oh, yeah, we found out later it didn't exist. But anyway, we're there controlling the oil.
And basically, of course, we never really talk about the devastation that took place in Iraq. In fact, I've actually talked to a woman, Susan Lindauer, who is a CIS, and she told me what I had actually read at the time, and that is that Saddam Hussein offered to resign, offered to suddenly let America come right into the country, not suddenly let him go, have a small little area where he could live, and turn the country over to us. We didn't want that. We wanted a war. And we bombed, certainly destroyed large segments of Baghdad. And I don't know how many people we've killed there, 100,000 million. Who really knows? Who really cares?
Yeah, I've heard up to a million Iraqis. And I think the purpose of that was to take Iraq out of the oil market to justify these, the oil price went from the 30s, $30 a barrel or lower back before the Iraq invasion. It went up to... By 2007, 2008, it went up to $147 a barrel and, $4 gasoline at the pump and whatnot in the U.S. So, and it stayed stubbornly in the area around $100 a barrel ever since. And that you take Iraq as the second potentially largest oil producer out of the oil market, and through the destruction, you can do that. And then you get nice contracts for Halliburton rebuilding what the Pentagon has bombed away, and building all the defense bases so that the soldiers can occupy the country behind these walled compounds called military bases.
And because you make the point, of course, that Halliburton is Dick Cheney's company. Dick Cheney was the president of Halliburton, and even after he went back in government, he made sure that Halliburton certainly got all the choice contracts. And
nothing personal, just corruption.
Right. And you talk about the Project for the New American Century, so-called PNAC. And would you want to just talk a little bit about that, and certainly this organization that really was one of the most powerful organizations behind our push into certainly the Second Gulf War, and then with this idea of really sort of the pretty America dominating the world and even coming up with, one of the things you point out is they even talk about how they can come up with biological weapons that will be specific for certain genotypes. What they're really talking about is certainly killing off certain races of people. I thought that was a frightening concept.
Yeah, it is. But I don't think it's possible, frankly, that kind of a biological weapon. I think chemical weapons are possible, but that doesn't go to specific genotypes. They can't control genes the way they madly want to with the genetic manipulation and all these things. It's an unstable process. So at one point, I read a report years ago, Israeli scientists were intrigued by the idea of a biological weapon that would selectively go after Arabs and leave the Jews, the Israeli Jews, unscathed. And then what they found as they researched more deeply were both Semitic peoples, the Arabs and the Jews, and the gene structures are enough similar, we'd kill our own people too. So they quietly abandoned that project, I'm told. Going back to the restate your question, and then I'll.
Well, basically, of course, it really had to do with sort of the situation there, how the PNAC group, the project for the
New American Century,
was certainly intimately involved in manipulating us into certainly the war with Iraq, and then all the subsequent things that have taken place. The PNAC, the neocon group, is still there. These people are still working. Yeah. I don't know whether they're still having meetings, but they're.
Oh sure, they have new think tanks and so. But the neoconservatives, really, I looked at this intensely during the whole Iraq war after 9/11, the build-up toward war against Iraq and Afghanistan. And the neoconservatives are, in my view, as I see it at this point, an extension of the power of the military-industrial complex of the United States, with certain links into Israel to the Israeli military industry, which is heavily subsidized by the U.S., by the U.S. taxpayers. But that is this network of military interests. And the military interests, Halliburton is the biggest military contractor in the world, or used to be, and it's also the biggest oil services contractor. So it combines them both. But the PNAC was exactly, if you look at who was on the board, the neocons provided the political voice for this, Richard Perle, Doug Faith, all the people who were involved in the George W. Bush administration, Cheney Bush. Cheney was in it. Jeb Bush, the brother of George W., wasn't on the PNAC, but it didn't matter because Cheney was running most of the policy of the Bush era anyway. And Don Rumsfeld. So this is the Pentagon. Both Cheney and Rumsfeld are former defense secretaries with ties into the military industry complex that Eisenhower warned was getting too powerful back in 1961, by the way.
Richard Perle, Paul Wolfowitz, all these people, they all part of this PNAC group, the neoconservative movement, intent upon taking us from war to war to war.
Mm-hmm. And that's what the military industry does. And then through the wars, the banking interests who own those corporations, McDonnell Douglas, Boeing, Raytheon, making these missiles and so forth, so-called missile defense, all these companies are owned by these financial interests of Wall Street, City of London, and so forth. So you have this very powerful... As I see it, the power of the United States, or these private interests that use the United States as their shield, their power since World War II, since U.S. emerged out of World War II, is based on two things. One of them is that the dollar will be and will remain the world reserve currency that all central banks in the world who want to do international trade, who want to sell their goods on the world market, who want to buy oil on the world market, will have to buy it in dollars. Maintenance of that allows the United States to run a budget deficit, enormous budget deficit, now in the trillions each year since 9/11, and have people like the Japanese in the 80s and now the Chinese essentially finance it and finance wars that are against China's national interest by cutting off oil supply lines in Africa and the Middle East from the Chinese economy. So the Chinese have to do it because they have no place to invest the billions and hundreds of billions of dollars of trade surplus that Chinese exports earn the central bank every year, the People's Bank of China. So they invest it in U.S. Treasury bonds that earn interest, very little interest nowadays. But the role of the dollar as reserve currency is one crucial pillar of their power projection after 1945. And the other essential element is that there will be no challenge to American military supremacy. The United States today, the military budget is larger than the combined military budgets of the next 42 countries in the world combined. I mean, as one retired admiral said, who are we competing with, ourselves? I mean, it's insane. This is a system run amok.
I certainly concur, but basically, what's going to happen? Do you think that the dollar is going to be able to maintain its value, or simply do you think that the massive spending on the part of the Federal Reserve System is going to eventually certainly undermine the value of our currency?
Yeah, well, I definitely think so. The only thing that's kept the dollar internationally from complete freefall collapse has been the covert financial warfare that Wall Street launched in 2009, 2010 against the euro. The euro was emerging as a reserve currency alternative to the dollar in terms of size of the EU economies in the eurozone and so forth. So Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase, the U.S. Treasury and so forth, the Federal Reserve, they launched a concerted attack with the help of hedge funds in New York on the weakest link of the chain.
Hold that thought for a moment. Please go ahead. We've got three more minutes, and I'd like you to make that point because I think it's important people understand that basically, of course, we try to destroy other competing currencies. We try to destroy anybody. We want to be the major military force in the world. The only question is how long can you do that on borrowed money, and what's really going to happen to the financial stability of our nation? Please go right ahead.
Yeah, well, then the U.S., in I think it was 2010, the government of China began making very loud public statements about they had, I think, over $1.5 trillion of U.S. government debt and were watching the annual deficits under Bush and company increase at more than $1 trillion a year. And they said, well, we're becoming alarmed at the security of our investment in U.S. government bonds because there's so much new bond debt that's been issued, it's going to cheapen the value of our holdings. We call on the U.S. government to manage its accounts a little bit more sensibly. And at that point, China started diversifying from mainly buying dollars into buying euros with their trade surpluses, converting them into euros and investing in certain European assets. And at that point, Wall Street and Washington, Treasury and the Federal Reserve launched a massive speculation attack against the euro on the basis that Greece had cooked the books on getting into the euro in the first place, which was true because Goldman Sachs and Wall Street helped them cook the books. So it was an inside job all the way.
Well, I think we're in for a very, very fascinating time in the next year or two. I don't know what's going to happen, but I feel the war is imminent. I feel that certainly the debt will eventually be destructive for America as it has been for every other nation throughout history that has certainly done that. Do you have a parting thought before we let you go?
Well, I think if people – I'm personally not a pessimist, not an optimist. I try to be realistic, but I think if we focus on our own selves, our own lives, our own families, and look at the question of responsibility, instead of being passive and letting things happen to us and complaining about when they don't happen in a good way, taking responsibility for our lives, taking moral responsibility for what will happen to our children as they grow up, and informing themselves. That's why I write books, the books that I write.
Hold that thought, and we'll... Well, Mr. Engel, simply saying that at this point, the most important thing we can do is begin taking moral and financial responsibility for our lives, so that at least our children will have an opportunity for a better life. I want to thank you. It's been a fascinating hour. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you for having me.
Good night. God bless. Okay, fine. Well, that was William Engdahl. His book is A Century of War. It's available from Amazon. I can recommend it. It's a very well-written book. Well, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners out across America, indeed across the world, that my ministries, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. And if you are in a position to help us, we'd love to hear from you. And if you're not in a position to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, why, we hope that you will certainly pray for my ministry, for our provision and our protection. Because we truly are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And so this is our recurrent theme. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, let me recommend it. We have somewhere between 60 and 100,000 copies out. We're probably our 10th or 11th printing of the book, and it has certainly been circulated. It's being distributed by some very important people. We're certainly flattered for that. But we think that this certainly is the culmination of 50 years of research, and certainly the book is written about 10 years ago, but nothing really has changed. The same forces are at work. And basically, they agree with very much about what Mr. Engdahl has written about certainly how the oil interests and the banking interests. But of course, behind that, there really are secret societies. And behind them are powerful spiritual forces. And if you don't understand that, so much of what's going on today doesn't make sense. And so many of the things that are happening certainly are going to lead to terrible disasters. I think we're on the edge of some cataclysmic changes, and all we can do is advise people to begin making arrangements and preparing themselves financially and spiritually for the difficult times that lie ahead. Now, certainly, if you haven't just certainly seen our 4-CD set on the threat of an EMP attack, or gotten the DVD, Ambassador Henry Cooper, certainly on the threat of an EMP attack, you should. You need to get certainly Ambassador Henry Cooper's emails, look him up on the internet. He sends out a weekly email on the threat of an EMP attack, and as I read them, I see the great insight that he has, because Ambassador Cooper's a personal friend. We've known them, he and his wife, Bobby, for many years. But I'm certainly pleased to see that he's leading the battle to try to get people at least prepared personally for the very real threat. It's not a matter of if they're going to have an EMP attack, it's when. Because, of course, we don't have certainly one through a nuclear attack. We'll have a solar attack. And basically, solar flares can create the gamma rays that could simply fry the entire electronic grid of the United States and much of the rest of the world. We don't know when this is going to happen, but they happen about every 100 years. The last one was in 1859, the so-called Carrington effect. And it's time, well, it could be happen at any time this year or next year, because the sun has cycles, and certainly we are in one of those cycles at the present time. And probably before, if it's going to be in this cycle, it'll be before the end of this year, and then we won't have to worry for another 10 or 11 years till we get to the next cycle down the line. But we're talking about simply turning off the electricity all across America. And if you don't know what an EMP attack is, go up on the internet and look it up. But I so strongly recommend you get the 4-CD set on the threat of an EMP attack, the DVD, the talk by Ambassador Henry Cooper on the threat of an EMP attack, the book written by Michael Maloof, who is spent 30 years in the Defense Department. When he retired a couple of years ago, was a senior analyst reporting to the Undersecretary of Defense. I said in his book, A Nation Forsaken. And finally, we carry the 2004 Congressional Commission report on the threat of an EMP attack. This is not imaginary. It's very real. And so we ask you, of course, to go to our website and look this up, and give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and order this, and please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and our protection.
Let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer, God bless America. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with a light from above.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. It is 14 May, 2013. It is Tuesday. You're in the right place. And guess what? It is decision time. It definitely is decision time. If you're watching television, you're starting to hear the rumblings of a country who is starting to get it. They're way behind Power Hour listeners. They're struggling to make sense of, but wait a minute, the government is targeting people. How can that be right? Power Hour listeners know they have been targeting people for decades. But those that believe if we could just get our guy in the White House, everything will be fine, and they keep chasing that rabbit hole every 4 years, don't understand. But yes, it is serious. Getting more serious by the second. Waiting for the right time to strike is what they are doing. They're testing you. Things like Uganda, the immunizations in Uganda.